Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 9.5 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Wednesday, January the 23rd. Later this morning at 10 o'clock, there will be a public hearing at the state capitol on a bill that would permit doctor-assisted suicide under certain circumstances in Wisconsin. Our guest lawmaker, Democratic State Representative Frank Boyle, first introduced this bill in 1994, the same year that Oregon became the first state to legalize doctor-assisted suicide. But reportedly, this is the first time in 10 years that this legislation, called the Death with Dignity Bill, will receive a public hearing. It will take place at 10 this morning before the State Senate Committee on Public Health, Senior Issues, Long-Term Care, and Privacy. You will get an opportunity in this half hour to question Representative Boyle or to let him know why you support or oppose his efforts. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Toll free from anywhere. In Madison, please use 263-1890, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Coming up after 7:30, we will talk with a guest who will testify against this bill today, and you can agree or disagree with her, too. First, let's welcome in Frank Boyle, a Democratic state representative from Superior. He is co-author, along with Democratic State Senator Fred Risser of Madison, of the Death with Dignity Bill. Good morning.
Good morning.
We've talked about this with our listeners before on this program, but this is the first time this bill is getting a public hearing?
Well, in a number of years, almost a decade, certainly since the Republican Party took over control of the Wisconsin legislature in 94. We were given a hearing a couple of years later, a huge hearing in Milwaukee, and that drew hundreds of people. It's been a very contentious issue, as you can well understand. But yet I think a significant issue and a very important issue, particularly in light of the actual enactment of the bill in the state of Oregon over the past several years.
Yeah. So give us the basics of the bill. What would it do?
Well, the bill would allow a dying individual to seek a contract with the state with all sorts of protective provisions in place. The person must be 18 years of age, a resident of Wisconsin, suffering from a terminal illness defined as incurable and irreversible disease that will cause death within 6 months. That has got to be signed and confirmed by two different doctors. A psychologist, psychiatrist has got to do an interview with the individual. That person's got to be of sound mind and not incapacitated. They must file the formal request. 15 days later, the patient must again make a request in writing, signed in the presence of three qualified witnesses. And we go on to define who these witnesses are. They can't be related to the individual by blood, marriage, or adoption. They can't have any financial connection to the individual. So we then have the physician inform the patient of his or her diagnosis and prognosis. Inform the patient of the probable use and results of taking the prescribed medication. So we have all kinds of prohibitive protective mechanisms that the individual's got to go through. And then if they decide after all of this to actually assist in their death process, they would be prescribed a lethal medication to take.
And the doctor gives the prescription to this patient,
yes.
And the patient does it
him
or herself.
That is absolutely correct.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it hard for doctors, though, to say this person only has 6 months to live?
No, it's not. In fact, doctors typically will confirm that their diagnosis is usually 100% correct. And we've requested that two doctors, mm-hmm. as in Oregon. This bill reflects almost verbatim the bill that's law in the state of Oregon.
Yeah. And I guess, why do you think this is so important?
Well, a number of reasons. Number one, modern technology, the ability of machines to keep people alive has truly intervened in this whole argument. Beginning in the early 60s with the transplant of the first human heart, the medical community and the and the religious community had a dilemma. They needed to redefine brain dead, which they did in 1968, meeting in Harvard University in what has become known as the Brain Dead Committee, where they literally redefined the sanctity of life, where we keep people alive for whatever means, however long, to a quality of life, and defined then brain dead. And they did it because they needed to keep people alive in order to harvest life-saving organs. So medical technology has intervened tremendously in the death process, giving rise to the living will, durable power of attorney, and I think the death with dignity option. People ought to have the right, personally, to decide if the pain is uncontrollable, if the quality of life is no longer there, if they are, in fact, dying of an incurable disease, that the compassionate and humane thing is to let them participate in the final decision of their lives. And I think I think the Constitution in the basic law of the land reaffirms that those laws not specifically stated by the Constitution are left to the individual. And the individual ought to be able to participate in the last important decision of their lives.
We are talking with State Representative Frank Boyle, author of a bill that would legalize doctor-assisted suicide in Wisconsin. The Death with Dignity bill gets a public hearing this morning at 10 o'clock at the state capitol. If you were testifying at this hearing, what would you say? Or what questions do you have for Representative Boyle about his legislation? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our public radio public hearing will continue after this weather break. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 18 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Wednesday, January the 23rd. We are talking with State Representative Frank Boyle about his Death with Dignity bill, legislation that would allow for doctor-assisted suicide in Wisconsin. After 7:30, we will hear from a guest from a group that opposes this bill and who will be testifying against it at a public hearing later this morning. First, though, your calls for Representative Boyle, and our first caller is Robert in Eau Claire. Hi, Robert. You're on the air.
Good morning. My comment is that nobody needs this law. I know that Oregon has it. That's good and all that, but it's really not necessary. Anybody that has a terminal illness simply needs to have morphine prescribed, and that's basically their death sentence. There's nobody, I don't know anybody that's ever been prescribed morphine that's come off of it. My father had cancer. He knew he had cancer. He was prescribed prescription drugs. He just stocked up on them, took a small amount to, ward off the pain for a period of time, and then just overdosed, basically, is what he done, and killed himself. There's no need for any kind of legislation for this.
It's happening already,
Representative? Yes, it is. There's no question about it. With a nod and a blink, the morphine drips is being turned up in hospitals as we speak, inducing respiratory failure and death. But why shouldn't the individual be allowed to participate in that? If nothing else, for the psychological comfort, to know that if the pain is not controllable, if the quality of life is such that they have got to, in some sneaky way, overdose and medication, I don't think it's a compassionate, right, compelling way to go. And I agree with the caller. I know it's happening all of the time. Families meet with cancer-dying patients and give them barbiturates and Jell-O with the approval. I think hospice is doing a wonderful job in terms of pain control. But yet we found that a certain amount of pain is not controllable. We had a video when I first introduced the bill by a family with the physician's approval of a woman dying of cancerous growth the size of a grapefruit in Madison. The cancer was literally separating her head from her neck. It was a terribly ugly, painful demise. And we listened to the impassioned pleas of this dying middle-aged woman to have assistance in the death process. That assistance could not be rendered, and she fought bravely, and her body continued to fight. She suffered several months before, in fact, the cancer separated her head from her neck. There are those horror stories out there. And in Oregon, in all of the years, there's only been 1,000 contracts that have been requested. And of those 1,000 contracts requested, only 250 deaths have been induced, self-induced, in all of those years. So the theory of the duty to die by an individual or the slippery slope of euthanasia is proven false in Oregon.
Yeah, does that mean the others who entered into the contract decided not to self-induce their death?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And the will to live is paramount. People have the tremendous will to live as long as possible. But what they found in Oregon is the psychological comfort that people have, knowing that if the pain is unbearable, they don't have to secretly pack away medication to overdose. They can do it legally with their friend, with their family present, in a very compelling, compassionate way. And I think that people deserve that right.
Yeah, the prescription or the medication that would be prescribed is up to the doctor, Representative Boyle?
There's a formula base of five different prescriptions in Oregon. I'm not quite sure what they do, but they do provide a very painless immediate death for the patient, very painless, in a combination of drugs.
Holly and Shai Octon, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Both of my parents and a couple other family members have gone through the hospice experience. Now, I was raised in a suburb of Detroit where Dr. Kevorkian was actually doing quite a bit of business. And I, for one, think that should have been something more afforded to my parents and other family members a long time ago. I guess my only true comment is we do these things for our animals that we have such great love for. Why can't we do it for our family members? And I guess I'll take your comments off the air. Thank you.
Well, there's no question. There's no question about it. You know, we're afraid to talk about death. We all think that we are somehow immortal. We're going to live forever. We're not. We're all going to pass through this experience of death. And some of us simply would like some options here in making the most significant decision, perhaps in our life, is how we die.
Yeah. Thank you, Holly. Karen in East Troy. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm against this bill. I just feel that to give the doctor the permission or the right to hand somebody a pill that would kill them is morally and ethically incorrect. And my mom died of cancer, and this is many years ago. The family, my father, had signed paperwork stating that she was not supposed to, if she went into respiratory arrest, she was not supposed to be helped. The hospital, though, when it did occur, did intervene and did resuscitate her. I think that's where your target should be, is getting hospitals to not give medical care to sustain life.
Yeah.
To people that are terminally ill, not handing over a pill that will kill them.
What about that, Representative Boyle?
Well, I think the caller has a very good point. There are a lot of religiously affiliated hospitals who simply deny the legal right of do not resuscitate or the living will and durable power of attorney. I know of a number of people who have indicated to me that when they question the hospital putting people on life support who were dying, the hospital simply rejected their request. So I think we're going backwards in this whole concept, and I think we ought to go the other way. Of course, you know, this whole country has been in the most regressive decade of its history, so it doesn't surprise me that somehow we are retreating from what I think is the very legal right for people to reject life support systems, to die a natural death, a death with dignity.
Dawn in Onalaska. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. I would have to say I support it because I don't think anyone else should be in a position to tell me that, you know, you have to put up with this pain or discomfort. And it sounds like the bill has so many different steps. Like I said, I don't think they're necessarily loopholes, but they're precautions and measures that need to be met. So if I meet those, I don't think a group of people that I've never met should be in a position to say, no, she does not have that right to die, and you know, they're making that decision for me. So I think you're right on with the bill.
Well, thank you. And again, of the 1,000 folks in Oregon who requested their document in Oregon to die, only 250 in the past decade have actually participated in their own death. So I want to dispel the slippery slope of euthanasia, the dying person's duty to die. It's not accurate. It's not been proven to be accurate in Oregon.
Yeah. What about the argument that... Oh, it's hard to make the argument even, but even terminally ill, life can be worth living, and somebody who might get that diagnosis that you have 6 months to live might just be depressed and maybe take his or her life too hastily if this is allowed.
Well, again, we need two doctors, different doctors, to reaffirm that this individual is terminal, that they have, in fact, less than 6 months to live. So the individual is going to die in 6 months. In Oregon, it's taken 116 days on average for the individual from the time they sign the contract. So this could hardly be considered rushing to die after receiving a six-month prognosis.
Andy in Middleton, hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, good morning.
Good morning.
I really support this legislation. The thing that I would like to ask both... Representative Boyle and whoever is going to be on the other side of the street, who's going to finance this? If it's if it's disallowed, so that somebody has to pick it up out of their own pocket, I don't think this is quite right.
What do you mean if it's disallowed?
Well, I mean, in other words, if the hospital has a decision on whether their life will be ended or not, and the doctors approve it, and the hospital says no, who's going to pay for it?
I'm still a little confused there, but
I think the gentleman is referring to 90% of our health care is consumed in the last 2 months of our lives for a lifetime. I think he's indicating that prolong the death of people through medical technology, there's a tremendous financial burden. I don't think we should be concerned with that. I certainly am not. I love modern technology. I love what hospice is doing as an organization for dying people. But I do think that this is pretty much a very reasonable purchase a prescription is basically all that it is entitled. In Oregon, 98% of the folks requesting a contract had universal health care coverage. So it wasn't a flight away from health care. They did have health care coverage in Oregon.
Yeah, only 30 seconds. Are you expecting a pretty big turnout?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a spirited debate once again.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a significant debate. We ought to talk about end of life again and again and again, and we ought to reasonably and rationally discuss what's happening in Oregon, because they have certainly set the example nationally.
Thank you very much for being with us.
You're certainly welcome. Thank you.
State Representative Frank Boyle, author of a bill that would legalize doctor-assisted suicide in Wisconsin. The bill gets a public hearing at 10 o'clock this morning at the state capitol. More on this after the news. This is the Ideas Network. It's 7:36. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Thanks for being with us on this Wednesday, January the 23rd, as we talk about a bill that receives a public hearing this morning at the state capitol, a bill that would legalize or allow doctor-assisted suicide in Wisconsin. We heard from the co-author of this bill, the Death with Dignity Bill, in our last half hour, and State Representative Frank Boyle of Superior told us why he thought this was necessary for Wisconsin. And now we will hear from a guest who will testify against it at the hearing at 10 o'clock this morning at the state capitol. And we will continue to take your views and questions at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Rita Marker is an attorney for and executive director of the International Task Force on Euthanasia and Assisted Suicide. And as I mentioned, she will be testifying at today's hearing. Good morning.
Good morning.
So what are your problems with this bill? If two doctors say a patient is terminally ill, has 6 months to live, and that patient wants help to die, what's wrong with that?
Well, there are a number of things wrong with it. What is happening if this bill passes is that something that has always been considered really tragic, assisted suicide, and something to be prevented, will be transformed from a crime into a medical treatment. It'll be transformed into something that should be facilitated. And once that is done, then we change so many things. It's like a Rubik's Cube. It sounds like it's changing one thing, but it really affects every aspect of the patient's life.
Yeah, what are your fears that this becomes then a medical treatment?
If it becomes a medical treatment, well, let's look at the context. In Wisconsin, 1 out of 11 people at any given time do not have health insurance. The people who are proposing this bill, and I really recognize that they are of goodwill and well-intentioned, but they tend to depict it as something in which this would be facilitated by a caring doctor who, after lengthy discussions with the patient, would write a prescription for the lethal drugs to be used as a last resort. And that sounds good, and it sounds so protective. Yet people who don't have health insurance are not going to be able to have lengthy discussions with a physician. And even those who do often don't have much time with a doctor because of the constraints of HMOs and managed care to contain cost, which is time is money. So the way it's depicted is really, I think, unfortunate. But to go further than that, we look at the fact that even the treatment that is authorized for people who have health insurance is often based on cost containment. The cost of drugs for assisted suicide is less than $100. So if assisted suicide becomes a legally accepted medical treatment, then the economic force of gravity is obvious. You know, what could be more cost-effective than a prescription for assisted suicide?
Yeah, respond to Representative Boyle's argument that he doesn't buy the slippery slope of euthanasia argument, saying that in Oregon, 1,000 contracts were entered into among terminally ill patients and doctors for this assisted suicide, but only 250 deaths of self-induced deaths.
Yeah, his figures are a little off, but not a lot. Actually, there were 292 reported deaths since the bill went into effect in 97. It passed in 94 and went into effect in 97. But we have to look at those annual reports and recognize that anytime we use the figures, we have to say reported figures, because all of the information in the annual reports, the official reports, comes from the very doctors who are carrying out assisted suicide. And the very first annual report, official report, the officials in charge of formulating those reports said there's no way to know if additional deaths went unreported or if they are accurate or incomplete. There are no penalties for not reporting. You go to the fact of what about complications and other abuses. And again, the same doctors who are prescribing the drugs for assisted suicide are the ones who are making the reports. But even according to those reports, they're only present at about 1 out of 5 assisted suicide deaths. So the fact that everything's working just fine and no problems, what they're reporting is coming from often secondhand information or from guesswork on their part. He also mentioned, I believe, that you can tell with certainty that a person has 6 months to live. In fact, Dr. Peter Rasmussen from Oregon, who has acknowledged being involved with assisted suicides in the double digits, has said that he says there's no way to really know if a person has 6 months to live. There were closed-door hearings held a few years back in which the people that were very involved in this spoke very candidly, and I'll be providing documentation for people today about this, by the way. But during those closed-door hearings, Dr. Rasmussen said we could easily be 100% off. And then he went on to say, I don't think that's a problem. He said if we say they have 6 months, they might have a year, but he didn't see any problem with that whatsoever, that the patient wasn't harmed. Well, in fact, they are, and in fact, it points out that you can't tell if a patient has 6 months to live. 6 days, maybe. 6 months, no.
Yeah, so how is the patient harmed? If this patient is terminally ill, will die in 6 months or 6 months beyond that, and they're in pain and want to die, how is the patient harmed?
Well, let's go back to the Oregon reports when you say if they're in pain. Mm-hmm. In fact, in those reports, and again, we have to take them with a grain of salt because it's coming from the doctors who are doing the prescribing, but they acknowledge that this is not a result of pain. The only connection with pain is perhaps the fear of pain.
Mm-hmm.
But again, let's go back to this whole idea of what then happens. Why is it when we look at other things and we realize that cost drives everything, that when this is such an inexpensive treatment, and in fact the state of Oregon actually pays for assisted suicide for the poorest Oregonians, while it will not pay for some of the other treatment and care that they actually need and want. So we have to look at where that heads and the fact that there are abuses. The only way we find out about them is when they get into the newspapers. To give you an example, there was a lady by the name of Kate Cheney who died from assisted suicide. Her own doctor didn't want to provide this for her because he said she really wasn't aware of what she was asking for. So her daughter took her to a psychiatrist, and the psychiatrist said no also because the daughter was coercing her. So then the daughter took her to a physician who was an ethicist at a managed care company who said, yes, she's capable. And so you had a situation here of coercion from the daughter and of the mom probably not knowing what she was requesting. Now, how did we find out about it? Because the daughter actually went to the newspaper, the Portland Oregonian, and was tremendously upset that her mother had to go through these hurdles. And yet, supposedly, those hurdles were the safeguards. But I think Representative Boyle was accurate when he made the Freudian slip of saying they're really loopholes. Those safeguards are illusions.
Let's go to the phones. Our lines are full at the moment. Brad in Madison joins us first. Hello, Brad.
Yes, good morning. I'm in favor of this bill wholeheartedly, and I think we're missing some of the major points when we're talking about cancer and assisted suicide. We think this is happening in the hospital when really it's an opportunity to die peacefully at home, and it may not just be cancer. It can be people that have been diagnosed such as Lou Gehrig disease where their bodies actually start to fail.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is this other analyst you have on today is right. Healthcare costs are enormous, and a lot of times these people build up their lives with their significant others, and then at the last second when they get diagnosed with these terminally ill diseases, have to sell everything to pay for all this medical care. And then the significant others are left with nothing. So if they have an opportunity to go to a doctor and they're diagnosed, whether it's 6 months, a year from now, but they're diagnosed with that 6 months to live, they have an opportunity to allow their family to still live with everything that they have.
And that would be the patient's choice, Rita Merker.
Yes, and actually what we're looking at here is an argument that really, really brings us to the forefront of the cost of the money driving this. I want to mention something else, though. And that is that there is no law that requires that people undergo medical treatment that they don't want. In fact, Representative Boyle gave some rather misleading information, or if it is happening in Wisconsin, then it is illegal. No hospital has the right to refuse a DNR order unless at the time of admission that hospital has made it very clear to the patient or the patient's decision maker that they won't honor that or that they won't honor a living will. So both federal and state law require health facilities to honor such documents and such decisions unless information that they will not honor was given on a timely basis. So it's a straw man to say that people must continue to get medical treatment if they don't want it. That is not true at all.
Yeah, but that doesn't address the caller who said if somebody has, you know, some sort of deteriorating terminal illness, like I think he said Lou Gehrig's disease, and that person wants to end his or her own life, he thought that should be the right of that individual.
Well, and again, what we're doing then is saying, okay, assisted suicide is a good thing that should be facilitated. The caller also said if they have 6 months to live or a year to live or I think probably an open-ended sort of thing there, because if you are going to use the argument that the cost of this, even though the patient doesn't have to undergo medical treatment, but if you use the cost sort of thing, then a person who would live longer, let's say 3 months, 3 years, 5 years, with a progressive disease, then that would cost even more. So are we going to say this should be available to people who have 3 years to 5 years to live?
Our guest is Rita Marker, an attorney for and executive director of the International Task Force on Euthanasia and Assisted Suicide. She will be testifying today against the proposed Death with Dignity bill, which is going to get a public hearing at the state capitol. It's a bill that would legalize doctor-assisted suicide in Wisconsin. What do you think? What questions do you have? How would you testify if you were at the state capitol today? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're tuned to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. 12 minutes before 8 o'clock, coming up after 8, I'll talk with the author of Fear and Courage in the Democratic Party, who says too many Democrats have moved too far toward the center or even to the right, and says that Democrats, especially Democrats on the left, must put fear aside and adopt more politically courageous stands. That's after 8 o'clock this morning. We're talking about physician-assisted suicide and a bill that would allow that in Wisconsin. The bill gets a public hearing today at the state capitol at 10 o'clock. We heard from the co-author of the bill in our first half hour, Democratic State Representative from Superior, Frank Boyle. In this half hour, we are talking with a guest who opposes the measure. Rita Marker is with the International Task Force on Euthanasia and Assisted Suicide. And Laura in Lafarge is our next caller. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. I am in support of the bill. I have worked in a long-term care facility, and according to the Patient Bill of Rights, patients are encouraged to participate in the choices regarding their care as long as they are cognizant. And to me, I, again, hate to assign dollar signs to a life, but having watched close friends and family members perish from long-term illness that have exceeded a time limit of maybe a month or two as opposed to the 6 months, not only would it have left some money behind for their families and loved ones, but we might not be in the insurance debacle we are now. And as for DNR or do not resuscitate orders being respected, again, having worked in a long-care facility, that is not always the case, whether it's law or not, because if the right people can't be contacted in the right amount of time and papers aren't put in the right place, that person is kept alive with life-sustaining measures or comfort measures, whether they wish to be or not. And then there's the people who have to sit there and deal with the fallout of this extremely depressed, unhappy, chronically ill person who is hoping to pass on to another place and is stuck where they don't want to be. And I'll take my comments off the air. Thank you very much.
Rita Marker?
Well, there's a whole bunch of things to respond to in that. First of all, let's take the very last thing she mentioned, the chronically ill person. So we've gone from talking about a person who has a predicted life expectancy of 6 months to the chronically ill. A DNR is to be respected, and if it isn't, then it shows that the law isn't being followed. That should definitely be addressed. She also said she hates to assign dollar signs to life, and that is a point I was making earlier, the fact that this will really be based on economics. Also, the fact of the patient being competent, and I want to go back to something that Representative Boyle said earlier because it was misleading, in fact, inaccurate. He said his bill requires that a person have a psychological evaluation. That is not true. The bill specifically states that if, in the opinion of the doctor, the attending physician, and the consulting physician, that the patient has mental illness or depression that is causing impaired judgment. Now, they can still be mentally ill or depressed, but only if it's thought that their judgment is impaired would they have to be referred to a psychologist or a psychiatrist. And even then, if that psychologist or psychiatrist finds that yes, they are depressed, yes, they are mentally ill, but they know what they're doing, then they can get the prescription for assisted suicide. Let's go back to Oregon. In Oregon, according to the official reports, only 4% of patients are being referred for any type of psychological evaluation. So we're talking about people that can be depressed, be mentally ill, that this can be based on cost containment, that they could be chronically ill in this short discussion of less than a half hour. Mm-hmm. We've gone from these so-called safeguards to expanding it within the realm of just this discussion.
Yeah, but though to clarify, those two callers who supported the legislation brought up as one aspect of their support that terminally ill people who linger want to be able to leave money to their families and would rather not spend all of their money on futile medical treatment.
And nothing requires that they do so. No one can be forced to undergo futile medical mm-hmm. treatment, any type of medical treatment that they don't want. In fact, they could even sue the facility for battery for mm-hmm. forcing it on them, and their decision makers could do the same. So it is a myth that the law permits hospitals and health facilities to impose medical care on
right.
patients who do not want it.
Yeah.
And if that's happening, then it should be addressed that these hospitals aren't following the law. And for heaven's sakes, if they aren't following the law there, how would they follow the law when it comes to this particular proposal?
Yeah. Well, how about just the medical treatment for pain control or symptom, relief of whatever the terminal illness might be? You're saying that you don't have to do that, but if you don't do that, then it's horrible.
Certainly the medical treatment as far as pain relief, mm-hmm. that definitely should always be provided when the patient wants it. But that's not where the cost comes in.
Mm-hmm.
And people should have the right and do have the right to get the pain control that they need. One of the unfortunate things is, though, that many doctors aren't trained in pain control. They are trained in diagnosing, they are trained in treating or attempting to cure, but many doctors have never had a course in pain control during their whole medical education. That definitely should be addressed. But are we going to give those same doctors who don't know how to do their job right, not through any fault of their own because they weren't trained in it, give them then the right to write a prescription for a deadly overdose of sleeping pills, because that's what is used in Oregon. It's an overdose of sleeping medication. And so that isn't even pain control that they're using.
Right. Well, let's go to Hayden in Green Bay. Hi, Hayden.
Good morning. I have a question. It seems like the whole emphasis of the speaker is about cost control and expenses. I haven't heard any compassion for the pain and suffering of those who are dying. And I know I've gone through this family members, and I wish you'd get our emphasis away from just the cost and more on the
Well, and that's just what we—that's what we're just talking about, though. But that's what people are saying is that who support this is that the person with the terminal illness should have a say in whether he or she lives or dies.
Well, and the person who is ill obviously should have a say in getting all of the adequate pain control that they need. The point of that I was making related to the cost containment is that it actually costs more to do the pain control, because it would mean that the physician would have to take the time to talk with the patient and actually find out about their symptoms, about their pain. In fact, we have a book that we call Power Over Pain, How to Get the Pain Control You Need, because we know that patients need and want pain control. But if it's less expensive to give somebody a prescription for a deadly overdose, then they're not going to get the pain control they need, because it's cheaper to just end their lives.
Yeah, but again, though, it's not like the doctor is going to say it's going to be cheaper to end your life, so here's an overdose of sleeping pills.
No,
this is something that the patient wants.
No, they're definitely not going to say it that way, and I do recognize the goodwill of people that are proposing this, but mm-hmm. it doesn't change the fact that it is less expensive and that the doctors often don't know how to do the pain control, and rather than referring the patient then to a pain control specialist, they would make this available mm-hmm. to them. And recognize one other thing. If this is legal, as it is in the state of Oregon, the law requires that every patient be informed of all options that are available to them. So once a person is diagnosed or misdiagnosed as falling within the category that would qualify for this, the doctor is compelled by law to let them know that this is available to them. What does that tell a patient when the doctor is saying, not necessarily in these words, but it means this, that the law thinks this is good if I kill you or care for you? The patient has moved out of the category of people for whom it is recognized that suicide is really a tragedy into a category where it's going to be facilitated by a doctor.
Yeah, let me get DJ in Fond du Lac on, and I'm sorry, we're almost out of time, DJ.
All right. I'd like to talk about what happened with my grandmother. My grandmother ended up being diagnosed with cancer. About 6 months before she ended up dying, she decided to check herself into a nursing home because the family could not stay with her at all times to make sure that she was all right. So there was a cost that was involved with that she could not end up not having to deal with. Ended up that the day she checked herself into the nursing home, she asked to be put down with our family dog because our family dog was going to be put to sleep 3 days later. A few months into it, she made the comments about how she was upset with the fact that this was not life. And I think that this bill doesn't go far enough. I think that it should be the decision of people. We have organ donor cards. We should also have a DNR.
I'm sorry to cut you short, and we absolutely don't have any time for a response, Rita Marker, though you still, though, will be testifying today against this bill.
Right.
Yeah. Rita Marker, attorney for executive director of the International Task Force on Euthanasia and Assisted Suicide. The hearing on this bill, the Death with Dignity bill, at 10 o'clock this morning at the state capitol. Thanks to Leo Duran and Karen Prager for producing the hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.